Good evening for me, good morning for the rest of you. Welcome to the Outpost Frequencies of the Last Movie Outpost.com for all your news, reviews, and everything cool about movies. I'm hosting this evening, not George Lucas, but with me is Dom and Yoda.
Hello there, Outposters, and welcome to a wonderful Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, it's I'm actually outside because it's so pleasant. I will freeze later and do my brilliant impression of Jack Nicholson at the end of The Shining. But until then, I should be happy to carry on talking.
Urge to kill, rising.
Absolutely. So it's been another interesting week news-wise. So let's talk about some of the news first of all. I'm calling that up here. I'm on my other computer, so it's a bit more complicated. But news this week. First of all, Justice League continues to embarrass Warner Brothers. Does anybody want to tell us what the story was about that?
Sure, I'll give it a shot. I'll read it as we're speaking. So Warner Brothers has reportedly tried to do everything they can to make Zack Snyder's Justice League go away. They tried to ignore its existence until the parent company AT&T trailed them to sort themselves out in the face of unprecedented fan demand. Then they tried not to promote it, feeling it had been forced upon them. Well, it had been forced upon them because HBO Max and their parent company, DirecTV, had said the people want it. Everybody wants. This is like Noble Willingham in the middle of Good Morning Vietnam. The troops want it. I want him back. Reinstate the man, you know. Yeah. So that's what was going on there. And they, in the meantime, the worst thing that could have possibly happened to Warner happened. It turned out to be a hit. So,
which nobody was expecting.
Not really. I mean, here's the thing. The original Justice League movie, the Whedon version, was so god-awful. And I don't know how much of that is on Joss Whedon and how much of that is on the Warner suits. And to be fair, how much of that is on Zack Snyder because of how bad Batman v Superman and to a lesser extent, Man of Steel were received, which, lest we forget, those movies were not received that well. So, you know, we want to shit on Warner Brothers for all of this, but apparently it's not all their fault, but it is their fault of how they've been handling it after the fact, and they're saying that they've been trying to actively suppress the Blu-ray and DVD release by leaving it unlisted in their publicity for physical media releases and posting the wrong version of the trailers, the Whedon cut. So it still hasn't worked. It's outselling its nearest rivals 5-1.
I think they're in an awful situation where it is way more popular than they thought it was going to be. But because of that, if they give in to the fans on this one, they are going to have to get Zach back and pay all the cast and make another one, which is obviously going to cost a few million dollars.
Well, that's true to a certain extent, but it's also, I think some of it is Warner acting like petulant children because they just found out that they were proven wrong. And instead of just saying, okay, well, if that's where the money is, let's put our money into that and let's figure out how to fix this universe. There's a bunch of suits that just, maybe they'll get fired. You know, maybe they'll say, you know, we were wrong. And in Hollywood, I mean, we've seen it on the political side where if you say the wrong thing, you have a bad tweet for 10 years ago, you get canceled, you get torn to pieces, right? And this is actual real money we're talking about here. So if any one of these guys admit that they may have made a mistake, because that's the kind of pleasant, you know, fostering creativity, that's the kind of atmosphere they have in those corporate boardrooms. You know, we're willing to say we were wrong once in a while. No real blowback. We'll learn from it. Well, yeah, that's what happens. So
no real blowback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dom, what's your take on it?
If there's one thing a studio collectively hates. It's being proven wrong and having it rubbed in your face by your parent company and your customers, because these studios know best. They spend millions of dollars on market research, and it failed so spectacularly this time that I can't wait for the inevitable HBO miniseries on the making of this god-awful movie and the unauthorized behind-the-scenes tell-all book to come out, because I think the disaster that was the Justice League fiasco is, I think, only topped by how great the backstory behind the sequel trilogy for Star Wars probably is. I think it's phenomenal to look at from a distance and just see a studio, as Yoda said, basically throwing a fit over being wrong while they're making money. It's money they don't want. They should actually give it away if you don't want it that badly. And if you are so convinced you're right, despite the obvious staring back at you, go ahead and give that money, or put it in a big pile like Joker did in Dark Knight and set it on fire.
Or just give the Blu-rays away.
Oh yeah, or just give them away, because if you hate it that much, just give it away.
You gotta do it like E.T. the Extraterrestrial. They'll put it in a landfill to be found 30 years later, rather than let any of you have it.
Yeah. As we're digging through the undergrowth here, we have what is called a Blu-ray of
Justice League. Now, many of you may remember this movie. It was 4 hours long, but unfortunately it's been lost to history.
You can imagine the telecast then getting cut, saying, "This has now been unapproved by Warner Brothers."
It's no longer canon.
It is absolutely phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
I like the idea of a mini series about this, because I can imagine some actor getting his first gig in Hollywood sort of saying, "Wow, I've got a major part in a HBO Max. I'm playing Joss Whedon."
who's the guy that played Cyborg? Ray something, I think. I don't know, but his career's
been moved on. Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. You can kiss it goodbye. And I think anybody associated with the inevitable miniseries that hopefully does come out, you will find that work will be few and far between afterwards, because I think even then studios will sort of stick together. There's, I guess, that kind of unwritten blacklisting. And it's like, we're just not going to hire you. Not for anything in particular. We're just not going to hire you.
Well, you shit on the entire... I mean, you come out and you just air all the dirty laundry. Mm-hmm. It was probably reasonable that he did so. I mean, from what I hear, Whedon's dug his own grave for a lot of reasons, but is who would want to work with you? What if you did something wrong and he didn't like it? Next thing you know, it's airing out all, he'll never be able to get a big name movie again.
No, you can't be trusted.
No,
and there are times when you have to keep your mouth shut. Making movies is not easy. And if you're, you know, if you're a hole in the ship, ship's not going to keep you around.
Well, and maybe he doesn't give a shit. I mean, he can live off of those residuals for a while. But I respect him for coming forward, because clearly it wasn't like the things he was whistleblowing were bad things. They were things that needed to be talked about that were clearly a problem. And I mean, it's interesting how one of the things, like, I guess Whedon is a real notorious asshole towards women. He's this big feminist. He's a typical male feminist, which means behind closed doors, he's a complete and total obnoxious asshole. And there's something that was brought up. Like, there's this scene where Flash like rescues Wonder Woman, but he accidentally ends up on top of her, like sprawled out on top of her on the ground.
Yeah.
And she wouldn't do the scene. If you look at it closely, you don't see her face. It's some body double. And if you start looking around, like there's that scene in Age of Ultron, same thing happens with Banner on top of Black Widow.
Yeah.
And I guess this is a thing with him, that he likes to put men on top of women in some sort of rescue situation. It's a little bizarre, but she wouldn't do it. So that was a whole thing that he brought up. And then, of course, the internet likes to, you know, somebody with no time on their hands likes to dig. And then next thing you know, you've got all these clips of these different movies and shows that Whedon has done where it shows a guy sprawled up on top of a woman. Nothing's safe, guys. Nothing's safe.
Internet gonna internet.
Internet's gonna internet.
Speaking of directors with strange fetishes, let's move on to our next story about
that beautiful segue, George.
Do you know what? I wasn't even going to say anything because it was so wonderfully done, but then you just interrupted it. I mean,
I can't help it. I got to point out art when I see it, man.
But Tarantino talks about his fetish for women's feet. And again, it's one of those things that Tarantino, it's kind of one of those things you don't notice until you think back about it. But he does always seem to have women's feet on display.
Well, he really downplayed it, as I recall, in the article. And I don't have it up here because I'm trying to make sure that my poor old laptop can handle all these video streams and stuff coming in. But my understanding is that, you know, yeah, it's an artistic thing with him, but he probably sees it as like something fun that he does in his movies, and everybody else thinks that he's this, you know, Joe Biden-esque crazy person that goes around just picking up babies, you know, and the truth is probably somewhere in between. I don't know.
Dom, sorry. No, go on.
It's one of those things. I think somebody picked it up. He ended up hearing about it. He's like, that's kind of funny. I'm just going to do it. If you're going to accuse me of it, I'm going to do it. And like, here you go, nerds.
So he's trolling him. That's what he's doing. He's trolling everybody in his own movies. That's fantastic.
Yeah. There's got to be some reason to watch him. So,
you don't like Quentin Tarantino movies. Is that the case, George?
Don't get me wrong. Some of them are well-made movies, but then some of them are completely and utterly dull, but kind of live up to his own hype. I saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and to me, it was an advert for 1969, because literally every shot was showing you that you're in 1969. See that poster over there? 1969 there. And I just, all the way through it, and I just lost interest in the whole story, and I do find his films laborious to get through.
His Twitter is at notgeorgelucas1. Send your comments and your letters to the Quentin Tarantino hater.
I'm used to that. Well, I mentioned once about Michael Myers and Halloween and said I was flogging a dead horse, and I was, oh dear, the abuse that I had. How dare you say things like that? But no, I'm just not a massive fan of him. I'm not taking away the fact that he has made some incredible movies, and he has certainly changed, well, not changed, but he's left his mark on cinema history. But I'm just not personally a fan of his films.
Yeah, to each their own.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, to be honest with you, I am with Tarantino, it's a hit or miss kind of thing. Like, I love the Kill Bills. I like Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction quite a bit. And some of the others are a little bit, it's pretty good. I mean, all of them are good movies. They're all well put together, well told, you know, artistically crafted. They're all, you know, from a technical and storytelling standpoint, they're great. It really just comes down to, did you like that story? And some of them I can take or leave.
Yeah.
And that's,
I think
I can understand that.
I do find as well, some of it is just his script writing. You mentioned Kill Bill. Sorry about the ducks. You mentioned Kill Bill. And I found that the end speech at Kill Bill about talking about Superman and everything else, that was just Tarantino just sort of, I imagine they're smoking a joint going, oh yeah, Superman should have a blue cape, not a red cape. I'm going to put that in there. And it kind of like lost all that ending I found in that particular film. So, I mean, again, it was a well put together film, but I don't think when you examine his, well, some of his scripts don't work out very well. When you think of like Pulp Fiction, the script in that works wonderfully well, apart from the what's in the briefcase. John Eddie gave away then, but I mean, if you believe what's in the briefcase, then obviously that's a bit far-fetched. But some of his films, when you examine the actual content of them and break down the scenes, I'm just, like I say, I'm not a massive fan.
Yeah, I think it depends on your. I mean, some of it is, you know, the gratuitous violence and all that kind of stuff. And I, you know, I find it fun. I can see why some people don't. I think Tarantino is up there with like Hitchcock. He's like the Hitchcock of our generation in some ways, as far as a masterful filmmaker who makes a specific style of film that is easily identifiable as a Tarantino film, just like a Hitchcock film is identifiable as a Hitchcock film. And very few guys put their stamp on a film anymore artistically.
That's a fair comment.
The thing that I admire. Quality, I'm not trying to put him quality-wise with Hitchcock. I mean, don't misunderstand me. I'm talking about a guy who has a very specific artistic standard, and you know you're watching a Tarantino film, and you know what you're going to get into.
I'm glad you corrected that.
Yeah, I mean, like, Edgar Wright is kind of the same way for me. He has an amazing style, and there's a lot of layers going on. And are every one of his films perfect? I'll be honest with you, the one I like the least is what's it called? It's the guy who fights the ex-boyfriends for this girl.
Scott Pilgrim versus
Scott
World.
Pilgrim. I'm not a big fan of that particular movie, but most of his other stuff I love. Baby Driver I loved. Everything he's done with the Cornetto trilogy I love. So
You mentioned Hitchcock, and there's now loads of birds around me.
Yeah, I've noticed.
I probably shouldn't have sat outside.
It's getting worse for you, man. You're in deep trouble. You're going to be attacked here at any moment.
And here's an interesting nerd fact that the birds had no music in it. So if the birds are going to attack me, I don't even know because I can't hear the theme music coming in. Usually there's a warning like that.
That's true. You don't even get the violins.
Like in a computer game. Anyway, right. So now, moving on. I don't know how to do a segue to this one.
Understood.
Slimy Worms. June. No. that's a bit mean to say that, Quentin Tarantino. But anyway, June, the final trailer. Now, apparently you guys have watched this, but I am trying to stay away from it because I'm trying to... when I get to the cinema, enjoy it as much as I can without knowing too much, even though I know the story quite well. But without spoiling it, what did you make of this final trailer?
It's massive. It looks like, I think I've said it before, it looks like a massive old Hollywood epic. And it legitimately, I think, got more interesting for me. I would definitely go to a theater and see it. I just want to go to a theater anyway. There's just nothing I want to see. But I would go absolutely set aside time and I think watch this. And I'm not even the most familiar with Dune itself. I know enough. But yeah, I was like, oh, okay. At least it looks big and I can enjoy that. Whether or not I'm going to care about any of it, I don't know. But it is going to be a visual feast and that might be enough just to carry it for me.
That is what I'm looking forward to. I haven't been to the cinema since Tenet, which was last year, was it? But I haven't been at all. I mean, I've enjoyed movies, but I have quite enjoyed watching them on streaming. But from what I've heard, this is a cinema movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It looks like it.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. I looked at the trailer. To be honest with you, I saw the trailer and I said they showed a lot of big shots, like, oh, we've got these special effects shots finished now, we can show you these. but anything that had to do with storyline or speaking parts, I don't think there was very much new that we hadn't already seen. It was just arranged a little different. I think you had Zendaya doing a voiceover and that was about it. It did not, I mean, Doom is a pretty impenetrable piece of fiction anyway, so I don't know. I mean, it's The David Lynch one, I've never been able to really get through without just glazing over and going, oh my God, I can't do it. The guy is blowing snot and floating and that, why is stinking
this? Get
this?
A six pack and you're good.
Whoa, hang on a minute. That's not, Sting was excellent in that movie.
Okay.
That doesn't mean excellent.
Remember, this is
thinking.
The guy who doesn't like Quentin excellent. Tarantino.
Well, no, I didn't say I didn't like him. I'm just not a like huge fan. But no, yeah, Sting is one of those people.
Sting is excellent.
I mean, funny enough, he is good in stuff like say, The Dune. It completely took you out of the movie. For just those moments that he was on screen, it was just, that's the thing that I find sometimes with the miscast or just bad CG or anything like that, that as soon as you come out of that movie, you've kind of just lost all that magic, because the Lynch version, I think, is great. I've seen it several times. Even the extended one, which is something like 3 hours. They had
Jesus Christ, there's an extended one?
Oh, no. The extended one is the one to see. It's it's something you absolutely have to watch.
And then, speaking of then extended versions, there is also talk that Denis Villeneuve, or whatever his name is in French, I can't do it in French, Denis Villeneuve,
I can't do it in American, so you're fine.
but he's done like a 4.5 hour version, is it, or something? 4 hours 20 or so? It's a crazy amount of time. I would love that. I would genuinely love to go and see that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, you do it the old-fashioned way, too. It has, you go in, you don't actually have trailers for anything because this movie's going to be too long, so you can't fit it all in. You have just organ music or old classical pieces
overture.
Playing.
Intro,
and it just says overture or intro or whatever it is for 5 minutes, and then there's a break right in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness, that
After
would be
two
great.
Days, you get an intermission, and then you do the next
Yeah,
day,
there's an intermission.
You know. It's great.
Exactly. And they bring you refreshments and pat your head with a towel. You get to change your clothes and you have to be back in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, everybody take a shower. We got showers in the back.
Yeah. The shower. Yeah.
An actual movie.
When Titanic came out, it was on film and they had an intermission in the middle of it. And a friend of mine was working in the cinema. And he said two lads came up to him one day. He was tearing tickets on another door. And they said, when's Titanic 2 out? And he went, what? He said, Titanic 2, when's it coming out? And he's going, what do you mean Titanic 2? There's only one Titanic. And apparently they got to the scene in the boat and it went to the intermission and they went home. And he said, you went to see a film called Titanic and the boat didn't sink and it didn't strike you as odd. You know, it's always a great film, but a bloke and a bird meet on a boat and they have sex and that was it.
And that's
they don't
why
know
we don't
what
have
an intermission
intermissions
is.
Anymore. The same thing happened with you remember when Grindhouse came out, and they had between Planet Terror and the good one, the Quentin Tarantino one. There was an intermission there, and Death Proof. That's right. Movie succeeds only because of Kurt Russell. But there's an intermission in between that with fake trailers and everything, and people legitimately thought the movie was over and left, and they had to put signs up at theaters saying Grindhouse is two movies. There's an intermission of about 10 minutes or whatever it is. Come back. And people were upset, and I believe they had to release them separately at some point just so people could see them. That really
it'd be nice to see the usher sort of going, no, stay.
Don't leave. They've got
like
your ass
back
in
your seat. Push Pat and Jurassic World.
There's more to see, you filthy idiot.
This falls under to me the thing that we have to tell everybody. The world did not start spinning when you were born. Okay.
That's a good one.
Learn some damn history.
The good thing is tickets for June have just gone on sale, I know, at my local cinema. So I'm just waiting to hear back from a friend to confirm when we're going to see it. But I think I'm seeing it on the Thursday. And I think the first showing's at 1 o'clock. So I will be looking forward to seeing it. And I'm planning on taking in a video camera so I can film some of it to make a video review.
Oh, that'll go over well.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. I'm a reviewer.
We don't have a budget center for bail.
Bail, yeah.
So You're on your own there, bud. Just tell me
George Lucas. The movie starts on Thursday, ends on Saturday.
That's right.
Okay, so then the next piece of news that we were going to quickly briefly touch on, say briefly, we've been talking for ages now, but Joaquin Phoenix talks about a Joker sequel. So what does everybody make of this? It's a Don't. Great idea, right?
Don't. No. You know, I've been thinking about that movie a little bit after I watched that, and I thought
I have to be right.
You go ahead. I'll you're just me and Dom will talk. We don't need him. The Joker movie as a movie and as a kind of a redo of Taxi Driver or something like that is fantastic. As a movie about the Joker, I think it kind of fails. And the reason why is because I think the Joker himself, at least as a character, he's a lot of things, but he is not out of control. Yeah, my phone's ringing.
The studios are already calling. You're not bringing a camera.
No. No, it's my work. And they're got Oof. Something wrong, but I guarantee it's nothing I have to be involved in. The Joker himself is like much more in control. Like mm-hmm. he's not this broke. I mean, he's broken, yes, but he's a guy like the one in The Dark Knight is a Joker. He's a different version of it.
The best one.
Yeah, he's a different version of it. He has weird mannerism, but the dude is in control. He's got a mm-hmm. goal, and he's going to go for it. Even if the goal is madness and chaos, he's got goals. He's got plans. He's going to make it happen. And Joaquin Phoenix is just, he's just a victim through most of it until he finally, shoots a couple of people. But it's all haphazard, and nothing is really planned out. And people say, the Joker, he's chaos. He's like, he's chaos, but he's got plans. And he makes his plans work. They're just chaotic compared to everybody else's plans. So, I like the movie as a movie, not as a Joker movie.
It's okay. Joker doesn't need an origin story and should never have one. And the problem with that is no matter what you try to create for an origin story, it's not going to live up to the character itself. That's part of what is so great about Joker in The Dark Knight is he just exists. He is chaos, and chaos has always existed and will always exist. And to say, he began as this mild-mannered guy who got his feelings hurt and this, that, and the other, and he becomes, this agent of chaos. It's like, that's just... To me, that's absolutely absurd, and it's kind of a letdown, and it really doesn't actually do any service to the character Joker itself, because, like you said, he's got a plan. His plan is chaos, and he's going to try to achieve it one way or the other, and he should just exist. It should just be a state of being, and that's essentially what he was in Dark Knight, was just a state of being, and you don't need anything beyond that.
What do you think of the killing joke? Did you ever
never
read
got
it?
All the way through? I know I think I actually have it down in my bookshelf down here. It just never quite got to it.
It's not a very long story.
Yeah.
I think it's probably the best one because it shows it shows how he could have become this within comic canon and all that. And he is and he does have echoes of how the Joker we see in the movie happened. Mm-hmm. But they also make a point for the Joker to say, where'd I come from? It's like, if I have to have an origin story, I wanted to make it multiple choice. Like any one of these ideas could be real, And this story that they relay, that he relays in here, could be real, may not be. We don't, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
And that was the only time they did that where you could see him as a victim and yet see him become what he became. And they didn't quite pull that off. Now, a Joker, too, I think is, I don't know. They're talking about putting it in the same universe as the current new Batman. and he would be that Joker, and I'm like, oh, nah, I don't know. This is the Robert Pattinson.
Oh, is that? Oh my God, that's still happening.
Oh yeah, yeah. They've had trailers and everything, buddy.
Wow. Well, you've done a good job because I've completely forgotten about it. I think it's absurd. The great thing about even the Dark Knight Joker is he has, when he's explaining his scars, it's a different story every time. His
right, the multiple choice thing,
clouded in that sort of myth and multiple choice. And I think that's the way it should be. There obviously is a beginning, and you don't need to know what it is. You can make it up. It's scary enough.
Well, I think it's leaving it to your imagination of how a guy can turn into what he turns into makes it great. So welcome back, George. We were saying that I feel like the Joker movie, one, it doesn't need a sequel, and two, that this version of the Joker is not as the Joker is not correct, in my opinion. It's a great movie, like a remake of Taxi Driver type of movie. I think it's great. But as a film about the Joker is not a guy who has things happen to him and just reacts. He has plans. He has motives. Yeah. It may be madness, but there's a method to his madness. And there's nothing more that saying really applies to more than the Joker. He knows what he's going to do. He makes these giant plans and he executes them. And they may be in the service of chaos, but he himself is not as chaotic as, and certainly not a victim like that movie kind of portrayed him as.
It's kind of one of those annoyingly good movies that it is a great movie. Like you say, it was very well done and it was fantastic in it, but it's a movie that doesn't need to exist. We didn't need to know the history of him. And because they kind of, I don't want to say took liberties with it, but it's exactly the same as like with the prequels with Star Wars. You didn't need to know where all these people came from. Exactly. Solo, for example, you know, Han just turns up. He's great. He's awesome. We love him. We didn't need that sequel.
I had to know how he got his gun.
And how he made friends with that big hairy person.
Yeah. How Chewbacca got the nickname Chewie. I needed to know that. I need to know that his name Solo.
Can you explain that to me afterwards? Because I still don't.
It's very complicated. I'll get some PowerPoint slides and we'll go through it.
Excellent. So moving on then, since you guys talked about that, are we going to talk about the next story, or are we going to go on to the last one in the list there?
Hello, Sean Thompson. What is the last one on the list? I don't have, or the second to last one. Just what are they? We can decide. Well,
the UK politician calls for a female Bond.
Oh, yeah.
What's something I actually saw. So I actually know what was going on here. There are two. Politics is not my cup of tea. I don't keep up with politics and stuff, but there's the leader of the opposition at the moment is called Keir Starmer.
Oh, yeah.
Sir Keir Starmer. And he was asked about the new Bond. And it was funny when they said, you know, who would you like to be the next Bond? His reaction was, what's the word? I'm going to give you an answer, not knowing, because I've never seen any Bonds, because he's kind of just one of those people, you know? And I expected him to say glue. What's your favorite Bond? Glue, yes. That's the one I generally use to Bond things. But he did say that it should be a female Bond next, which has obviously been in... I mean, pretty much everything that we've been watching. Funny enough, just before this, I was watching the 1999 version of Lost in Space, and I remembered how the new TV series, just for old times, because it was one of those movies that was so bad, it was quite entertaining. But in the new series, obviously, Smith has been replaced now by a woman. And that seems to be the way of the world these days, that we take characters which are quite clearly written for and as men and turn them into women.
You know, this is where I struggle. I like the new Lost in Space, and I like that Dr. Smith, the way she's written and the way they made her. They didn't make her like a male version of the original Dr. Smith. She's a very she's a different character, but this is a somewhat different story that they're putting together here. And so I go, well, then if she's doing it well, then is it bad? Mm-hmm. Let me give you a couple examples. And this is where I struggle with these gender swaps and race swaps. Okay. And I think it comes down to authenticity. If you're doing it in an authentic way that serves the story, then I don't got a problem with it. My problem with it is that most of the time they do it because they think I'm a racist and a sexist, and they want to shove it down my throat to show me how wrong I am, even though I'm not. And so then then you object to that, and then that's the self-fulfilling prophecy, right? See, he's a racist. It's like, well, I don't want Perry White to be black, you know? His name is White, for God's sakes, you know? So I'm just kidding. I don't really care about Perry White that much. But the two that I saw that I think of where I go, this didn't really bother me. One was back in the Battlestar Galactica 2004 reboot,
yeah,
which was a fantastic show.
Really good show.
Starbuck being female in there did not bother me because that show was so different in so many ways. And the things that they were doing with Cylons and that sort of thing, it just didn't bother me. And if anybody remembers, Colonel Ty was changed from black to white. So, I mean, mm-hmm. there was race swaps and gender swaps in there, but none of it was to make, or at least I don't think it was, to make some weird political statement.
And oh, one more, absolutely not done for that.
No.
Would be surprised if the creators were like, no, that's exactly what we did it for. It's like, no way. It was executed way too well.
It was executed way too well. So I had no objections really to that. Then there was a more recent version, one that's not nearly as important or anything, but it's interesting that I think it serves the story. And it's The Flash. And The Flash had... in that story of The Flash, the TV show they have on CW, his mother died because the Reverse Flash killed her when he was like 6 or 7. And his father was wrongly imprisoned for the crime. So he's basically orphaned. And so the Detective West, whose daughter is Iris, he takes Barry in and raises him as his stepson. Now, he's old enough to know it's not his father, obviously, and that Iris is not his sister, but they kind of got raised that way. And so, you know, that would be something in the back of people's mind. Except that they made Detective West black, which, of course, made Iris black. So now, you just don't think of the whole brother-sister thing because they're not the same race. And in the service of the story, you know, you get that whole Luke Skywalker Leia thing just off the table now because they're not related. We know they're not related. Of course, they get together and get married by the, you know, halfway through the series. But you never have that stupid brother-sister dynamic going on because nobody really thinks of it that way.
Yeah.
Just naturally, you're not going to think of it. So to me, good change in service of the story, right? So it's like, I got to pick and choose these things. Now, making Bond female for the sake of making Bond female, and we'll get into that. That's like the Doctor Who thing and some others. And then they have these really cringy lines. Like, I think there was one where in the Doctor Who, where the guy goes, "You're not Doctor Who, he's a man." And she goes, "I've had an upgrade." It's like, oh, God.
It's funny you say expressions like that. Expressions that get to me is when it says, "It's about time that James Bond was female. It's about time that Doctor Who was female." And it's kind of, is it? Why? Why is it suddenly about time for them to suddenly become a woman?
It's about time that Princess Diana was played by a burly old white guy, I think. When you do a story about Princess Diana, make it old, fat, farting white guy. I think that would get her essence perfectly.
to our British and Twitter fans. That is Drunken Yoda at one on Twitter.
Well, that's the point. It's ridiculous.
What gets me is the way they're quite happy to swap the gender or the race of some people, but then not others.
Oh, it always goes one way.
Obviously you can't have it two ways. You couldn't have Ryan Gosling playing Martin Luther King, for example.
No, that would be great. That would just be crazy.
I totally watch that. I'm ashamed to say. What, Ryan Gosling gets shot at the end? Okay.
But again, bastard. I think the expression has been used over on British TV, at least, that it's about time that Bond was played by a woman. Yeah. And it's kind of, why is that? James Bond was a secret agent for the 1960s. To be fair, he doesn't need to exist at all nowadays, because if James Bond was a real person, he would be sat in front of a computer, typing secrets to the West and that kind of thing, and look like us. No offense.
could you just see that set to the music, like somebody sitting there typing, like da, 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 da. You hear the music in the back, da 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 da. He's like, oh god, fuck it up. Oh, email crash, god damn it.
James, can you get us a coffee from the machine?
Oh, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself.
Ta-da, James Bond will return with to only eat lunch.
Fantastic. You win the stream, Dom.
Good night.
So in line with this with James Bond, not necessarily obviously being played by a female, but he is going to be replaced. Daniel Craig has now said he has finally had enough, which he said three movies ago, but it seems to be the case. So I have found a list online of who might replace James Bond or Daniel Craig.
Well, so I'm gonna assume, I don't want to spoil it for you guys, but I'm going to assume that they're going to reboot the entire series.
Yeah.
Okay.
Spoiler alert. Yes.
I was gonna say, Dom, have you seen it? Have you?
What? The latest James Bond?
No Time to Die.
I haven't gotten to it yet. I plan to. I actually do want to see it. I am a fan of Daniel Craig as James Bond. I like what they've done, with the exception of maybe one movie. They've all been good to great for me.
Okay. I think this last movie was much better than. Those trailers were so bad because they showed this new 007 black lady just, making cringy comments to Bond. But in the actual movie, it's not nearly as bad as that comes across.
Yeah. And I've heard it's okay. A legitimately good film. So I'm like, okay, I was hesitant, and I've read the reviews, and there's nothing spoiling about it for me. I kind of figured out what was going to happen in the trailer. I still want to see it. It got really good buzz, and I was like, okay, if I can find some time to go do it, I'm definitely going to. And I've liked Daniel Craig as Bond, so I have no problem with it.
I like Daniel Craig as well. I found that they have been hit and miss. The last one, I have watched all of them because of Drunken Yoda's videos on our YouTube channel about the Love with Bond. I have watched all of them in the last 6 months.
Thank you for the pimping.
That's okay. But I found Spectre was very dull. There's nothing. There was a boring car chase. Dave Bautista was in it. Christopher Waltz, and a big explosion in the end. And that was kind of me for that. And so with this one, I will watch it when it comes out on streaming. But I'm not a person who is bothered about going to the cinema to see them. I do think Bond not died a long time ago, but they're just being churned out now. But then from what I've heard, this one is actually a little bit different.
It's more like it's more like a Bond film, like an old school Bond film in a lot of ways than has been that way. Because they've been making nothing but Jason Bourne films since Casino Royale. And it, and I love Casino Royale, but I mean, that's clearly the aesthetic they were going for. Well, now we're, you know, back then the Jason Bourne films were still going on, and now we're, you know, 15 years past. Yeah, Mission Impossible. And the Bond films have kind of been dribbling out over the last 15 years, and you go, okay, you know, what are you doing that's different? And the reason why people like Bond was somewhat because of the silliness and the jokiness and the gadgets and all the little things, all the little tropes, you know. Mm. Yeah. This feels more like it doesn't go full silly like Moonraker or some of the dumber Roger Moore stuff, Octopussy. But it feels more like an old school Sean Connery film. And Greg actually makes a quip and a pun here and there and smiles once in a while, acts like he's having a good time instead of just looking like he's just pissed to be there the entire movie. He does every single movie that I've seen him in. And for Spectre, I can understand why. But for the rest of them, he just looks like he's just irritated to be there. And this one, and maybe it's kind of like Harrison Ford in
Moody.
Well, I think it's like Harrison Ford in Force Awakens. You know, he went all out in Force Awakens. Why? Because he knew he didn't have to do anymore after that.
Even though they did drag him back.
They did drag him back, but I mean, he probably was in a green screen in his basement. You know, they just sent him the clothes and a camera and
a Zoom call
and a check. Yeah. And that's all he needed. So,
anyway,
checks in the pants pocket.
Moving on from Craig, the first name that I've got on the list, and the first few are quite obvious, but the first name is Tom Hardy. So what do we make of Tom Hardy as Bond?
If he does it the way he does Venom, I am all in. If he ratchets up the crazy and ends up in an aquarium eating a raw lobster, oh, fuck yes. I want to see Bond do that. There just hasn't been enough of that in Bond, in my opinion.
See, I'd prefer him from, what was the crazy one he did about the guy in jail? Oh, goodness me, I can't remember it now. But he did that.
You're dead.
But yeah, he did. Tom Hardy, I think, is a great actor. I always enjoy watching him. He's very, very good. I suppose he would make a good Bond. It's not like I can't imagine him playing a bad one.
He's getting up there too, though, isn't he? I mean, do they want to, I mean, you blink and all of a sudden 15 years have gone by since Casino Royale. Do you have that where you have like some movies, it's like it takes forever for them to come out. And then, you know, it seems like it was so long ago when they did. And other movies, it's like, and they just do, it's already 15 years. I feel like that way about the Ocean's 11 movies for some reason. I don't know if there's a timelessness to them or something. It just, they don't seem that old to me, but they're like
20-something years old, aren't they? Yeah, they were making those in the 90s.
Well, I still moan about Back to the Future because I haven't got a hoverboard.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, 15 years, that's... You know, I think he's well into his 40s already. I don't want another 60-year-old Bond like Moore was at the end of his stint.
Because, I mean, Roger Moore actually gave up, and at the end he said he was flirting with girls who could have been his granddaughter.
Yeah.
And he said it just didn't feel right, and that's why one of the reasons why he sort of gave the role up in the end.
Yeah.
It says, according to this article, it says that Hardy will be hitting his 50s quite soon.
Yeah. Oh. So I don't know if you want somebody that old, you want somebody in their late 30s, probably mid to late 30s, that could keep it growing to the role for quite a while. So I don't know. I mean,
I think it depends on whatever this next phase of James Bond is going to be. Are we going to continue this line, or are we going to turn in another direction and do something else like they sort of did with, between Sean Connery going to Roger Moore, of course, Roger Moore's tenure there, but then it goes back to gritty, and then we just sort of continue on. Then you get into eventually Pierce Brosnan, who was a really good James Bond. GoldenEye revives the whole thing, but now we're making big action spectaculars. Well, are we going to go back down to more Casino Royale round based, or are we going to continue on with the Marvelification of James Bond, which I hope to God they do not. I think these things should have their budget slashed and their stories improved upon, and
go from there. The James Bond cinematic universe, is that all the right, next? The JBCU, yeah.
Well, then you say that. I mean, obviously, James has gone through different. What's the word? What does Doctor Who go through again? It's not transformations, but go from actors. One body to the. Yes, that's right. And so, I mean, James has already actors. Done that. Yeah.
Yeah, they were all in continuity, loosely speaking, and I mean very loosely speaking, yeah. As you know, James Bond wouldn't Blofeld wouldn't recognize James Bond, even though he saw him in the last movie, things like that. Yeah. So
why does my cat not like you?
Yeah. In fact, the only thing that was kind of in continuity was on Her Majesty's Secret Service, him losing his wife, Tracy. Mm. And that was even still talked about, I think, as far as even the Brosnan movies. Mm-hmm. And then the reboot happened with Craig, obviously. So I don't know. I mean, you got to reboot it. So I guess the question is, how are they? I mean, I'd like to see them go back to something a little lighter than what they've been doing. Kind of, something in between. See, that's where I think this is why everybody keeps coming back to the Connery as the Bonds, because the Connery Bonds, I think, had that right mix of seriousness and camp that worked. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And the Roger Moore and the Pierce Brosnans went way too far. That's why I like the Timothy Daltons as much as I do. They were the right mix, in my opinion.
Mm, yeah.
Very underrated. They're action and not violence. That's the thing about Sean Connery films. There's action. It wasn't violence, necessarily.
That's a good way.
Except when he was slapping women ones. Around.
Domestic violence. That's a different category.
But The next name on the list, again, is somebody whose name has been banded around. Henry Cavill.
That I could see. He's already got the English accent.
Looks like one.
Apparently, he did audition for the role, but lost out to Craig in 2005. He was about 22 then.
Yeah.
So that's 15 years ago. So that makes him, 30? Yeah, coming up to sort of 36, 37, 38 maybe. So again, he's probably the right age to be able to carry on a... depending on how many more Bonds they do, obviously there's millions, but he will be able to carry on for, you know, a number of years because of his age.
Well, mm-hmm. did you see him in the Mission Impossible?
Yes,
that was what caused the whole mustache fiasco, right?
Yeah.
He was pretty good in that, as far as kind of the, you know, turning up the grit a little bit and turning off the Superman Boy Scout stuff. And I think he, you know, actually I would put him at the top of my list right now he's got the dark hair. He's got the looks, obviously. Oh God, he's got the looks. My wife.
I met him once and I just got lost in his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
With him though,
melting into puddles.
We did an article a little while ago that he is going to be playing, I'm sure it's a movie called Argyle. I forget who's doing it now, but that is based on a secret agent. And so that he is signed for and is doing and is making. And obviously, if he did that, would that then interfere with him becoming Bond? It's kind of him like going now and playing Batman after playing Superman.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, you know, that's... like, if he wants it bad enough, they want him bad enough. Contracts can be rewritten. Things can be changed. I mean, that's up to what everybody wants. So, of course, they couldn't even get him. They couldn't even get a mustache shave. So, I mean, anything could happen.
It still makes me laugh, that whole thing at the beginning of that. Because every time I, you know, I just sort of want to talk like that. No, I haven't got a mustache.
Yeah. they'll just CG it out. It'll look great.
Again, another big name that has come up several times, Idris Elba.
No.
No?
Well, I'm sorry. It's British secret agent. I'd like to see him have black hair again, at least.
He is British, though.
I know.
Is it the accent you're worried about? Or?
Yes. He's got all that Norse background, you know, from the Thor movie. So he's you can see that, you know, that that Swedish in him really comes out a lot. And we need to I mean to me that just seems like it's nothing against Idris Elba, but I just say create something for him that's awesome. Create him his own star vehicle and make him something new. Stop. I don't that's a guy I don't see any value in race swapping.
It's one of those things that I think he's kind of like the obvious choice for it. And because of that, at this time and climate that we're in, the obvious choice is generally not the best one, as we've seen with lots of casting with different people and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I have no problem with it, but I think it's an age thing. I really don't care one way.
Again,
the other,
he's just entering his 50s.
Yes, I think he's just too old.
I can see that. I mean, I would say anybody that's just about, you know, late 40s, because even if they're in their late 40s, by the time they get the next movie off the ground, the guy's going to be in their 50s. So,
yeah,
anybody that old,
take
just
too long.
Cut them off the top.
You need somebody late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah.
To be able to carry it for at least a decade, because if they're going to be doing the big ones, the bigger they are, the longer they take. You know, the fewer you'll do, the longer you'll be around. And if you're in your 50s already, that means let's say you're 50, your first one comes out, you're 52, the next one, you're probably 56, somewhere in there, 57.
Yeah, Roger Moore was 56 or 57 when he did A View to a Kill.
Yeah.
And it was already, guys, we need to recast.
I kind of want to see
a broken down James Bond that you're going to do, that would be fine. But if this is a James Bond, the case, then you do need somebody who's old and, let's, you know, for lack of a better term, weathered looking, then that'd be fine. But if you're not planning on doing that, then you do need somebody younger. If you had Idris Elba like 20 years ago, or
I
want to
see more. James.
Cool. What do I care?
I want to see James Bond Spy Kids now.
That's not good.
Sort of running around.
Oh, maybe they can bring out that old cartoon, James Bond Jr. Maybe they can make that live action. Oh,
our next candidate, not so well known, but comes from Netflix Bridgerton, which I haven't seen, but Reggie Jean Page. Now, he is a youngster. Well, he looks a youngster on this the photo that I've got of him here. He can't be more than 25, I would have thought. I've not seen Bridgerton, and I can't myself.
I have no opinion. I don't know the actor. I don't know the show. I got nothing. Dom, you got anything?
I'm looking him up right now. Okay. If he auditioned and got it, he looks like he could be a Bond. He's kind of a handsome dude, to be honest with you.
Apparently, he's the guy who has been reboot as the Saint in the new TV series, which obviously was Roger Moore's show, and that he did obviously, you know, back in the 60s, 70s. Right. So that's an interesting twist on things, that he's following sort of Roger Moore's, I don't want to say career, obviously, but he's following Roger Moore's roles, at least that he took.
Yeah. I think if you did an open casting call for James Bond, and you just said it was James Bond, suave spy, blah, 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 and somebody went in and auditioned and knocked it out of the audition and won it on merit, then I don't care what they look like. You sold the person who's signing the checks that you're the next James Bond. Good enough for me.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Because I don't think there have been any failures in casting a James Bond. Even George Lazenby wasn't a bad choice. And he's generally considered not the best. Timothy Dalton was a really good James Bond. Pierce Brosnan was up until sometime around
Diana. He did one good movie, and every all the other ones were not so
now
much.
Don't
what
give me
was
that.
Wrong with the surfing one?
No, every one of them would die another day.
I believe the answer is in the question there.
Yeah, it was a shame because, again, people always say, who is your favorite Bond? And I think they have all been good. They have all brought something different to the table, and they've all done a good role. Even Lazenby, I mean, I did feel he was a bit too much on the corny side, but he was still a good actor who gave a decent performance in it.
Yeah, This is a perfectly fine. Every Bond has been good, and they've all, like you just said, brought something different. Well, okay. Well, what are you going to bring outside of the superficial as the next James Bond? And if they nail it in the casting thing, then
so
got no problem with it.
With that, we have already mentioned her, but Lashana Lynch, who plays the new 007 agent Naomi in No Time to Die. Now, obviously, Yoda, you can comment on this because you've seen her in action. Would she make a good James Bond?
Nope. Next question.
Fair enough. Again, I kind of recognize her very loosely from some bits and pieces, but she doesn't scream Bond to me. And now, this one is a bit more of an interesting choice. Cillian Murphy, very well known over here for Peaky Blinders, which is sort of a particularly British show, so I don't know if you guys have seen it or not, but he was recently in A Quiet Place 2, and he was in 27
Scarecrow.
Days Later. Yeah, and the Scarecrow as well.
Yeah, I love
him. Isn't he in Sunshine 2, or am I thinking of somebody else?
Nope, you're right.
Yeah, Sunshine, that's a brilliant movie. It's an absolutely brilliant movie.
I like him very much.
Again, it's, are you going to bring, is he going to bring that weird, I guess, at least my impression from what I've seen, and there's kind of a quirky actor, maybe plays quirky characters. Are you going to bring something like that to James Bond? And if so, I got no problem with it.
I see him more.
There's an edge to him. There's some kind of edge.
I was going to say, I see him more as a villain as opposed to James Bond. I think he would make a great villain.
He can be charming, I think, in the right. He's got a way about him that if he takes it just a little too far, he goes right into smarm and that weirdness. But if he doesn't, if he keeps it in check, it can be extraordinarily charming, which is what James Bond needs. So I think he could be excellent in the role, and he's a good actor. So I'm sure that he could dial it whichever way he needs to, because everything I've seen him in, like, I barely recognize him in Quiet Place 2. I mean, he put on the American accent and he looked like just some guy that would own a pickup truck and you know, do sheetrock. You know, I mean, it was pretty amazing. And he came across like a broken man who lost his family and was scared and didn't want to, you know, get involved, and ended up getting involved and was kind of heroic at the end. So, I mean, you know, to me, that was a big stretch from a guy who played the smarmy weirdo as the Scarecrow. So I,
because he was really excellent in that. I remember particularly in the second scene where it's like, I don't need help. That's not my diagnosis.
That's not my diagnosis. You know,
he was fantastic in that.
He was.
Now the next,
I think he'd be good. I'd put him up there.
Okay. The next name I've just had to actually Google because I don't recognize him at all. But his name is Sam Heughan, and he's been best known as Outlander, which I've not seen, which is why I just had to look him up.
My wife loves Outlander. My mother loves Outlander. It's a show that just gets all the women going. It's about this woman who is from 1940s, like during World War II, and she walks through the portal to Narnia and ends up back in the 16 or 1500s in Scotland, and then she has to, and somehow I think she goes back and forth, but she falls in love with this guy back in time, even though she's married in the present, and it's all a big, you know, sappy, over dramatic romance. Yeah, it's fantastic. You should see it.
I mean, just looking through his other stuff, he was in The Spy Who Dumped Me, which I have seen, but I didn't remember him in. And also SAS Red Notice, which I've not even heard of. Oh, in Bloodshot. He was in Bloodshot as well. But again, couldn't place him in any of those.
It's got a square jaw, so why not?
It's all it's needed, right?
Apparently he's a Scot, so you know, Sean Connery was a Scot, so the name's Bond. James Bond. which was just an impression of Sean Connery. I was trying to do the Scottish accent.
Is that what that was?
It was a Scottish accent if they were born in India. The next one is another up-and-coming name. He's probably better well-known in the UK, but Richard Madden, who we are about to see in The Eternals.
Okay. Is he the guy with the laser beams out of his eyes?
I haven't seen the last trailer, so I don't know. He's best known over here for being in a TV series called The Bodyguard with Keely Hawes. And I know he makes a lot of ladies very damp. sorry. That's kind of all I know about him. I have seen The Bodyguard, and it was very good, and he was very, very good in it. He, again, is very Scottish, so I can kind of see it. He's only 35, which is a good age, so it could work for him.
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't really heard of Dan. I'm sure I'd seen him in a few things, but didn't really, the name wasn't a name to me until he became Bond. And then I started recognizing him in other things, but I think Layer Cake and some other stuff.
That's true. Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad idea to get someone that's somewhat unknown. Pierce Brosnan did a good job, but he was Remington Steele is what I knew him at then, And then when he became Bond, I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I think that kind of kickstarted his movie career pretty well. But I don't know. I think we're all in agreement. You know, anybody that's in their late 40s on up, just lop them off the top.
Yep.
Well, here we go then. Here's a younger lad who I want to say is still up and coming, but he's just done very well in The Green Knight, and that's Dev Patel.
Ah, that looked good too. I wanted to see that.
Green Knight is definitely worth watching. Let's get that out of the way. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed the whole thing, and I need to see it again because it was fabulous.
Yeah, he came across looking like a Spaniard more than an English knight.
A brave knight, yes. Yeah.
He was good, and the movie was good, if a bit of work. but it's James Bond. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe.
He,
I don't know.
To me, he seems a bit too scrawny, a bit too, like you say, I mean, when you think of like Henry Cavill, you think of like that fight sequence in Mission Impossible with him and Tom Cruise and the other guy, how, brutal and tough he was. Whereas, like you say, Dev Patel in Green Knight, he's fantastic in it, but he kind of is trying to prove his worth as a knight. And so not particularly brave or strong or big or, looks good in a suit of armor.
Yeah. I mean, I could kind of
see that. It depends on what direction Bond is going in. And if he fits that mold, then yeah, whatever.
Yeah, no, again, fair enough. Oh, this could be an interesting one. Tom Hiddleston. Loki. Obviously, he's really, really got himself down in that role as Loki and been very, very well known as that. Would that then take the edge off Bond?
A little bit, I think. Maybe as a villain, he'd be perfect, but...
Yeah.
I guess he put him in that column of what direction is James Bond going to go in, and he would probably fit something. But I think a lot of those other names, you just look at them and they go, oh, that's a James Bond. It doesn't even matter what direction you go in. I think with him and his style and maybe just his notoriety as Loki, it would be like, yeah, this is going to depend on what you plan on doing. And
it
whether
could
or not
be just another paint by numbers.
Yeah. Why waste the talent then? Just get a nobody.
If all I had was Loki, I would say no. But he was really good as the kind of the leading action man in Kong Skull Island. And I was, he played it much more straight and everything. So if you see his performance in that, and then, if he has the dark hair and everything. Yeah. Could, yeah, maybe.
Maybe they're going to do like the original Casino Royale and have loads of people all play James Bond. That's the mission. Whoever's left. I said that they should get all the actors in a ring and just have them all wrestle and like a King Fight of the Ring. And whoever's left in the ring is then becomes Bond.
And who wins? Yeah, why it's not? Peter Sellers' skeleton. He's the new James Bond.
The next name that I've got is James Norton. I can't, again, place much that he's been in, but apparently he's also in line to maybe replace the new Doctor, or be the new Doctor Who.
Well, you got to pick a lane, man.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to work together, is it?
That's when your worlds collide and they don't need to collide.
I keep thinking now, given enough time, and somebody will suggest, wait a minute, James Bond has got a TARDIS.
Q's been working overtime.
You can imagine somewhere in Hollywood, somebody has suggested that out there. But James Norton, I'm gonna look him up on the IMDb because I kind of recognize the face, but I don't really place anything that he's particular. Oh, he was in Little Women, the new version, the 1919 version, 2019 version. Sorry,
the 1919 version. No, it was very quiet.
He's been in, oh, I see, he's been in a lot of British stuff. I don't watch much British drama, but he's been in things like Grantchester and The Trial of somebody whose name I don't even recognise. And quite a lot of Happy Valley and War and Peace, a lot of British stuff. And that's obviously why I don't recognise him.
Walker in the chat says James Corden for Bond. His accent is so cute.
That would... I mean, just
Fat Bond, that's what we need.
Can I just say, as a British person, I apologize for sending James Corden to America, but we had to get rid of him.
Take him back.
I think we sent somebody over there, so we're even. So I'm trying to remember who it was. Shit. I know somebody ended up over there that renounced their American
citizenship.
So, we're swapping assholes all the time. It's fine.
And annoyingly, James Corden in the original series that made him famous, Gavin and Stacey, is a wonderful series. It's really well loved over here, and I will, if it's on, I'll quite happily watch it. And he plays quite a good character in that. But he is somebody who he is in America doing all this stuff, and everybody's going, "How did he get there?"
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Well, now we know. You guys kicked him out. Get out. Go to America. They'll watch anything over there.
Yeah, that's true.
They're fat and lazy. You'll be okay.
Yeah, you'll be fine. Netflix will give you 4 series. It's fine.
So another name that comes up, who has just had an amazingly big smash hit in Snake Eyes, Henry Golding. Now, he is... I think quite a good actor, but I mean, Snake Eyes was just, that is not something you want to put on your CV, is it?
I haven't even
watched that movie come out yet.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, it did? No, there's a sign for it on the 17 freeway on my way to work. That's been there for at least, I don't know, forever and a day.
Yeah, nobody wants to touch it.
I drive by and go, didn't that open and close months ago? I've been saying that for almost the entire year.
According to this is the quote that I've just seen, sorry, on this little bio thing that I've seen here. It says, Henry Golding has told The Guardian, which is a bastion of good news and truth and honesty in the UK, that he was asked about being the next James Bond, and he says, be it female, bi, gay, straight, trans, Asian, black, or Latina, but it's time for a change. And apparently he fits one or two of those criteria.
See, here's the problem that nobody seems to get. These characteristics are meaningless. Nobody gives a shit if you're black, gay, trans, straight, any of this stuff. It isn't what makes James Bond. No. It could be a straight white guy. If the guy, like, if as soon as the bad guy pulls out his gun, the guy screams and pisses his pants, he would be a bad James Bond. It's about how good they are at being competent, at shooting their guns, at sexing the ladies, you know.
What are you going to bring to James Bond, the character? Because we've said it just a few minutes ago, every actor brought something different. What are you going to bring? And if it's superficial, don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent way of putting it, yeah.
I mean, how anybody's going to beat Sean Connery, I still don't know.
Here's an interesting...
Uh-oh, George.
Best known, obviously, for Billy Elliot.
Oh. Say again, we lost you there for a second.
Oh, sorry. Jamie Bell, best known for Billy Elliot. And obviously some other movies that he's been in. You probably would recognize him if you saw him. He's kind of one of those people that turns up and goes, oh, yeah, it's Billy Elliot.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't he an Outlander? Action.
Possibly.
I want to say it that depends. He might be.
The what direction are you going category, because he doesn't look like he's taller than me. I'm 6'1". He looks like a small guy. I could be wrong. I don't pay enough attention, but it's one of those, what's the direction of James Bond going to be?
I'm opening myself up to harsh criticism here, but I did watch, because it was on TV, I didn't seek it out, but Jumper the other day with Hayden Christensen and Samuel L. Jackson about this kid who can jump, and Jamie Bell was in that, and he was really good in that, and he kind of played a tortured guy, but he did the action quite well, I thought, and so I can kind of see him doing it.
All right then,
and dancing as well at the same time, it would be lovely. Another, again, I don't want to say obvious choice, but John Boyega.
Yeah, he was so good as the stormtrooper, wasn't he? I mean, he really brought a lot to that role, or at least the role didn't bring shit to him, the poor guy.
I love his art over the whole.
There's somebody you feel bad for in that whole disaster. It's him.
Do you know what? I've always said that I, you know, imagine being cast in a new Star Wars movie and you're there with Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill and all these new guys and everything else. And then you're in The Force Awakens and the third one. And it's just, I've always felt so sorry for them because they had the opportunity that people would have killed for. And yet they were in those
and
three
they were
movies.
Given shit. Yeah. Well, yeah. I even feel bad for what's her name too.
Kelly Marie
Tran. Just, is that right? Which one is that? I don't remember any of them.
Rose
God.
Tico.
Yeah. No. The other one.
Oh, Ray.
Ray. It's like, you
can't think of her name, huh?
Failed and it really wasn't your fault. You were given nothing and you weren't there for on merit. You were there for some other reason and you were used as a pawn. And I just end up, you're like, oh, and now you're in these massive things. You're really not. You're kind of tainted by being in those Star Wars.
Because the thing is, I mean, he has worked then with Steve McQueen on the series Small Axe. And I mean, he was also in Detroit. And I mean, he's proved himself to be a fantastic actor.
He's a fine actor.
He's absolutely brilliant. But he is always going to be tarnished with that brush.
It's like, do you really? Again, and that's the other problem is James Bond is kind of a confined little space. You don't necessarily, aside from what it is you bring, you don't explore very much. So if that's what you're looking to do by taking smaller films post Star Wars, then I don't even think you'd even consider being James Bond.
Yeah.
You know what I'd love to see him do with James Bond if you really want to do it right? Reboot him and make him period pieces. Make him back in the 60s again. And you know, put some continuity back in there, maybe even remake the old stories, but just maybe with a little bit of, you know, updated, you know, like better special effects, better, you know, camera work, all that kind of stuff, because there's some questionable moments in some of those earlier films just because of the way, you know, what we had access to technology and things like that. But if you could either, I have found that, all the technology, and two, the fall of the Cold War, is the things that have hurt James Bond more than anything.
A little bit, yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, even though he's usually going up against Spectre, the Cold War backdrop is what Spectre used to kind of get one power going after another. I mean, what was it? Live and Let Die? No, that's not right. The one with the one where he dresses up as a Japanese person.
Oh, you only live twice.
You only live twice. That one is the Chinese pitting the Russians and the Americans against each other and using Blofeld to capture those rockets that are going up. Now, that part is a little silly, but I think that that could be reworked in a way that could be really interesting, because certainly the Chinese are not exactly there aren't a lot of people shitless right now. But let's talk about 2020-2021 there, Shanghai.
Hang on. But then are they going to make a movie which is making Chinese the bad guy because the box office in China is worth too much money?
Did That's Bond even open up in China? Is it making shit in China? I don't know that they're really going after China anyway. And I've heard rumors that, like, if China's banning half of the shit anyway, then let's shit on them.
Yeah, that's right.
No problem with that. But if you wanted to take Bond back to his Cold War roots, we're in a Cold War right now. We are in the sequel to the original Cold War, and it's with China. It's not the Soviet Union. It's China now. And if you want to take it back to that Cold War roots, again, the enemy is China, not the Soviet Union.
That's true. And we'd love to see him do that.
Like we just said, are they going to risk it? And the answer is probably not. Whatever they get in, and it sounded, I think I've heard recently that China is going to be letting less in to the country in terms of international films. And they're going to be propping up their domestic industry a lot more going forward. And it's like, again,
so here's your opportunity. If they're not going to give you money, then let's shit on them.
You make a Cold War James Bond set somewhere near an oil field in Afghanistan or wherever their belt and pavement or whatever it is they call it program takes them, and then there you go. You can keep it gritty if you want gritty, but it's a back-to-basics approach at least.
I'll tell you what, right? The next Bond then should be set in China with the China as the bad guys, but at the end of the movie, when it fades to black, John Cena comes on and apologizes.
Well, that's good. However, I mean, that all notwithstanding, I think you're onto something there, Dom, where you say this is the Cold War. But this is a different kind. Like, the Cold War before was, we got nukes, you got nukes, we'll push the button if you push the button. It was very in-your-face kind of Cold War in a lot of ways.
Very subtle one.
This is much more subtle. This is all about economics. This is all about using the internet to brainwash people and using Twitter and social networking and all this stuff to just get the West to hate themselves and fight each other, which they've done a damn good job with.
So the next Bond villain is going to be Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, why not?
Probably.
But here's the thing. Not? I mean, China's in big trouble right now. I don't know how much you guys know about Evergrande.
That's going.
you know about this? Okay, for those of you guys that don't know, because you never do anything besides movies, and believe me, I don't blame you. But the Evergrande is their 2008 housing bubble, and it's the weird thing is that I have been watching stories about China building these cities, these empty freaking cities, and I'm talking skyscrapers. Then, and like on the lower floor of the skyscrapers, you go in there and they have all these shops and stuff, and they'll put a KFC logo and a McDonald's logo. There's nothing in the shops. This is just like could be coming, you know, like it's a model home or something, except it's a model skyscraper. But nobody's actually bought anything. And then secondly, the Chinese people, the men over there will tell you, in order to get married, you have to have at least two houses, even if you never use the other house, because it's a status thing. So it's a complete waste. You know, so between that and Evergrande and their culture, they are heading for a fall of epic proportions. And now they've banned Bitcoin again for the 50th time. and they're trying to make their own stuff work, but it's all a house of cards, and Evergrande is like that first Jenga piece that's coming out. And I think that Hollywood would be, if they really care about the money, George, like you say, if they really want to make this happen, they would actually be better served than by shitting completely on China and hastening this, you know, just giving a little shove over the cliff that they've built up for themselves.
Oh, and when that house of cards comes crashing down, if you think your supply chain issues are bad now.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a problem that we've created for ourselves.
We need to get out.
We can build factories in our own countries or even in Central America or something like this. Countries that are not complete shit heels like China is. And that'll be painful, but it's something that we can get out of. China can't get out of their mess.
No. Join me just next week, because Dom and Drunken Yoda are missing. let's get back.
Welcome to the McLaughlin group.
The next name, there's a couple more names. The next name that comes up is, and it fits in nicely with our 31 Days of Horror that we've been doing on the last Movie Outpost, because we had the guest yesterday. Dan Stevens. Now, he is, again, one of those actors that turns up. He's probably best known over here for Downton Abbey. Because I know my missus loves Downton Abbey and stuff. But, I mean, he has done some other good roles. I see him as a decent James Bond. I think he would be quite good.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you him, maybe. He's got the eyes for it. I'll give you that.
He doesn't have the actor's name. I'm sorry. That sounds like my accountant.
Jeez.
Connery, you know. Yeah. Dan Stevens.
But there's a menace behind the smile. Yeah. And Sean Connery.
Yeah, but all accountants have that.
Yeah, that's very, very true.
Especially tax ones.
Another name that comes up is, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but Daniel Kaleu, best known for Get Out.
Was he the main guy in Get Out?
I hope I got that right. I can't see it here now. Black Messiah was the recent thing he was in. I'm sure it's the same guy. Have I just made a massive boob? All three of us are going to be missing next week.
Yeah, he looks young enough. And again, it's another one of those, what direction is James Bond going?
Sorry, yes, it was the same guy that was in Get Out.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I recognize him. I think I've seen him in something else.
Black Panther.
Yeah, actually, he was in Black Panther. He was like one of the guys that bred rhinos or something, I think. I don't know. Super rhinos, you know.
Yeah. Again, he's a great actor. Absolutely fantastic. And I'm trying to think of anything.
He looks good in a tuxedo. I mean, you know, you got tuxedos. There's all these little things you have to do, right? Okay, why not?
I don't think making James Bond black is a good idea, because a guy that's a part of the Her Majesty's Secret Service and the long history, he wouldn't have been black. It's just not very accurate, and it's an experience.
Back in the day,
that you should make a 007. You could make a 007. Named a different guy that takes over the 007 mantle, but he would have his own history, his own character, being raised as a black individual in London or in England, who would have a different history and a different, you know, life experience, as they say. Yeah. I don't think you could just transplant him into the experience that James Bond, who is apparently part of Scottish royalty or something. I mean, I don't know. It depends on which version of the movies you're watching. That doesn't seem to ring true. And I think you're losing out just by saying he's James Bond now and he's black. So he's James Bond with a tan. Then what's the point? You know, there's nothing, there's nothing inherently that is makes sense about that. And so you'll be watching that whole movie constantly scratching. But if it's, you know, Jim Davis. I don't know, whatever name you come up with. 007 Jim Davis. And he happens to be black. He's a whole different character, and he's got his own backstory, and it lends itself to a whole lot more creativity. Maybe he was raised in like where Boyega was and attacked the block, right?
Yeah.
And he's come from hard scrabble gangs, you know, kind of like the Kingsman thing. And you can and he's learned to become refined and learned to become a womanizer and do a lot of things that James Bond does. Kind of like that, yeah. And you don't have to be so, you know, in your face about it. But I'm just saying that a guy who pulled himself up out of that, went to the best schools. He
could have joined the army or
could have joined the army, things like that. And
become commander or whatever. And
yeah. And you could, you know, you had Bond go back to his home, which was, you know, shrouded in mystery. And it turned out to be this little, you know, he has a coat of arms, but it has this little cabin or something that's left. And there's all kinds of things they did with him. He could be coming back. And, you know, now that he's done, he's seen all this stuff around the world. You know, his whole world was, you know, knife fights in shitty Britain, you know, and or crappy area London, whatever your slums are called there. But
just London.
Yeah, we call that London. But my point is that he could go back there to meet his family and everything and realize, you know, what he does and doesn't have in common with them anymore, what he's learned and how small and how maybe what he could bring to stop them from knife fighting each other. I don't know. I mean, there's a whole area to be mined.
Not just that, but I'm then thinking in my head the way you're saying that is that if he is being chased by a consortium of Russians or Chinese or whatever the bad guys might be, but he goes back to his home roots in London and gets his old mates to help out. Not in a Fast and Furious way.
I was going to say, you mean, but it might you mean like The Rock got all his Samoans to kick him?
Ass? You know. If he did come from that background and they embraced that, and then he did end up, you know, on the streets of London fighting these. I mean, basically, James Bond does that, but James Bond does it in exotic locations all the time. So what is wrong with South London?
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, at one point, the exotic location turned out to be what the slums of Chicago. I think it was the Live and Let Die or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if you could make him 007, again, no, that's just a code name or code number.
Yeah, yeah, the badge, but yeah.
He could be the one that steps into, you know, the new one and then, but his life, and in that case, you could make the girl that was in this last one. I just don't think she was very good in this last one. I just don't think, maybe it was the character, maybe it was the actress, I don't know. She was featured too much in the trailers, and then she was just kind of a nothing burger in the movie. But I'm not saying that you couldn't make a new character 007. I'm saying it doesn't make sense to make James Bond black. That's just shoehorning in bullshit to me.
Like you say, if not that, again, I'm going into spoilers here, but from what I've seen, if James Bond died, then his number could just be passed on to a new recruit, a new person, somebody that can just take over that mantle.
Yeah. If you don't want to
repeat,
yeah, then if you want to keep that going, that's fine. And I would say, yes, I would see one with a different character that's 007. But making James Bond black, the only reason to do that is to pander.
Yeah.
And that's not fair enough. That's not a good enough reason to make
it's him not black. Fair to the actor.
No, it isn't. You're absolutely right, Dom. That is a perfect point. You're making him be something that, quite frankly, that character is not. It would be, to me, it would be the same as making Henry Cavill Black Panther. That would be just ludicrous. You wouldn't do that.
And also, you're putting them in a situation where if things then go wrong, you can kind of say, yeah, well, it was his fault, you know, and you can shift all that blame. So the actor really does have to think about
they wouldn't do that, George. They would do what they usually do. The audience is a bunch of toxic racists. It's toxic fandom. Yeah. It's like Principal Skinner. Am I that out of touch? No.
it's the children that are wrong. The last name on the list a sort of a curveball, really, but Michael Fassbender.
I don't know.
I think he's too villainous. He would make a great villain.
He would make a better villain. I agree. They should put him in the big head that he wore in that one movie.
Frank.
Yeah. They should put him in the Frank mask. Hello, Mr. Bond. Would you like me to play my ukulele?
No, you're from Manchester. Yeah. Wasn't you, Frank, yeah.
I'm going to go with, I don't know. He's more menacing. It is charming. His charm is menacing when he was the in Prometheus. He tried to act charming and human. And I mean, it's just the character, I guess. But
yeah,
there's a little too much menace in the charm.
Other than 300, has he been in anything where he was kind of the...
Magneto.
But then he's a menacing. That's the point, right? He's still menacing. Was he in anything where he was the hero, where he was the good guy, where he's charming?
The only other thing I can think he was in was Eden Lake, and it didn't go very well for him.
Yeah. So
he played the good guy in it, but
I mean,
that's maybe typecasting, but
I mean, I was completely said no, absolutely no. There's no way that Heath Ledger could be the Joker, and how freaking wrong I was. I'm thinking 10 things I hate about Batman, you know, and it turned out to be one of the greatest castings ever. So I don't know. Fassbender's a talented guy. I don't know. I'd have to see.
What? They're probably going to go in a whole different direction and go with like Danny DeVito or someone.
I'm in.
He's small. He can get into little places.
I'm in.
That would be fantastic to see. So basically what we've come to the conclusion is we have no bloody clue.
but this was, if you are into speculation porn, you got hardcore speculation porn today.
Whoa. Absolutely. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. It's kind of a decision that I'm glad I'm not making, because I think whoever they pick, there are going to be people who hate it, like it, love it, don't, whatever, you know, and just whichever way, whichever direction you're going to go in, it's going to be the wrong one for some people.
Mm-hmm. Fuck.
It always is. Yeah. I mean, you know, the important thing is that they listen to this podcast and do what we recommend.
Yeah, that's right. Go to thelastmovieoutpost.com.
That's right. I think we'll take up, you know what? You know what, LMO? Let's put up a poll. Let's put up a poll. We'll put up all these actors there. I will put up the poll, and we'll make an article with it. Send me the list there, George, and I will put up the poll in an article, and we'll let you vote on who you think would be the best James Bond coming up.
That would be interesting.
I say Rhea Perlman, but that's just me.
Okie doke. Well, guys, it's been an interesting chat again, as always. Dom, it's lovely to see you back with us. Thank you very much.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Yeah, since I got you in the fucking intro, it'd be nice if you showed up once in a while.
Yeah. but apart from that, I mean, like I say, it's been interesting. There's new news coming up all the time on thelastmovieoutpost.com, so be sure to check out that. And also, just as a completely shameless plug, hopefully tomorrow there will be up an interview with the wonderful Courtney Palm, because I chatted with her over the weekend, star of Zombievers and Sushi Girl. She was fantastic, and the interview I'm very pleased with. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it when you get a chance to see it.
I need to see Zombievers. I that has been on my list for a while. You know?
It was one of those movies that, I mean, but a lot of the films she's done are very much B movie, not to be taken seriously. And this was one of them. And do you know what? The beavers in it were absolutely fantastic. The whole thing, I thoroughly enjoyed it from beginning to end. It was brilliant.
Is it Tucker and Dale save the world kind of thing? Or is it better or worse?
It's different from that, but I just found it was one of those films that was just thoroughly enjoyable. It was obviously when you've got, okay, the premise of the story is, you know, it's about some beavers that when they bite people, they turn into zombies. And to me, I just went, I'm up for that.
How could you not be?
Exactly. And like I say, Courtney herself, it was strange because I watched her new movie, which is streaming on Amazon at the moment, Beyond Paranormal. And then speaking to her, it was actually quite weird because it was like, oh, no way, I just saw you in a film. So, yeah, we're going to get the interview up tomorrow. She was wonderful, and I do recommend you check out her new movie, because I have to say that, obviously, because I've just done the interview with her.
Did you watch it? I mean, seriously, no. Did you like Beyond Paranormal, or was it? Is it one of those, nice try, but we'll moving on?
I did. I watched it twice. Watched it when it first came out because she'd been plugging it on Twitter, so I did watch it. Wasn't massively blown away by the first time, but then I watched it again before the interview just to try it again. She describes it more as a sort of comedy B-movie, but I felt the director was taking things a little bit too seriously. And if I think he eased up a little bit, it would have been a bit more tongue-in-cheek. But the whole thing, it was a very interesting story for a movie which is shot on a budget, is what I'm going to say. It had its flaws, but Courtney was great in it. She was with a guy called, I can't think of his name now, but they're the two main stars in it, and it's very and it was quite good. Clint Howard was in it as well.
Clint Howard, the ice cream man.
Yeah. So it was definitely worth watching. And basically, I think, like I say, Courtney always gives a good performance. And like I say, a lot of her films are just that tongue in cheek fun.
Well, cool. I do want to give Zombievers a try, and hopefully
definitely get that one.
Hopefully, Courtney, when you hit that big, you know, prestige movie, and every, you know, you're at the top of everybody's A-list, you don't forget about us and keep doing interviews, because we'd love.
That's exactly what I said to her, because the interview, basically, like, we did the whole interview, and it was quite good. But then for about 10 minutes afterwards, we just chatted, because she was just happy to sit there and chat. And I ended up recording that. And in there, she said she's working on a script at the moment because she would like to do some writing and maybe some directing. And it's something that she thinks, you know, could be Oscar worthy, and good for her if it is. You know, I mean, we all start somewhere. Even if we do start with cheesy B movies, you know, some people have gone on to do absolutely great things from there. So
I would give so much money to hear, you know, and accepting the Oscar for Best Actress, star of Zombievers, Courtney, that they have to announce it over the thing, you know, and everybody's like, what the fuck?
I did say to her that she's got to remember us, so I'm hoping when she gives her Oscar speech, and she says, there's so many people to thank you. Thank you to everybody at Alamo.
That's the last movie Outpost. Us. And then, like, she turns around, she's got, like, another t-shirt on the back. Last movie Outpost.com.
To be fair, I think she probably would, because she seemed like that kind of person, like I say, when I was chatting to her yesterday. But yeah, that's going to be up tomorrow. So like I say, that's a shameless plug. But there's a good reason to go to the website and read the website and all the rest of the news that we've got up there, as well as our 31 Days of Horror. Because not next week, but the week after, we are going to be talking about Halloween and scary movies, maybe.
I think we're going to go through our 31 days and kind of give each one of that. We'll probably skip the news and just give each one of those those movies that we wrote about a little plug and quickie review. I think it'd be a lot of fun. And then if we want to add something onto there that maybe we think should have made the list, we can each pick one and kind of go from there.
Excellent. Okay. Well, thanks very much. This has been the Outpost Frequencies at thelastmovieoutpost.com. Thank you, Dom.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Drunken Yoda.
Anytime. Well, I do it every time. I have to actually stream this stupid thing.
And me, not George Lucas. You can find, well, us on Twitter. You're not on Twitter, are you, Dom?
Hell no.
Dom's the only smart one here.
Yeah, that's right. What a clever man. But yes, you can find Drunken Yoda 1 and I'm Not George Lucas 1 on Twitter. So you can hit us up on there if you've got any news or reviews or anything else that you think we should talk about.
And other you can also email us at contactus@lastmovieoutpost.com. And of course, the website, www.lastmovieoutpost.com. And don't forget, crush the like button. See it driven before you. Hear the lamentations of the dislike button.
And do the whole subscribe thing. I really hate it when people do that. But please like and subscribe. If you don't, they'll kill our children.
That's true. That's absolute truth.
Peace.
Okay, guys. Thanks again, and we'll see you next week.
All right. See thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.